And good morning. Welcome to the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm today's host, Chris Spessler, for this Wednesday, November 8th, post-election coverage that we're going to provide today. And I'm in the studio with Jack Peterson. Jack.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Did you have a late night?
I had a late night, and yet I'm feeling energetic and ready to go. My eyes shot open at about 6:30 in the morning, and I was wide awake. I think I'm still kind of humming after last night.
a little bit of adrenaline.
Yeah.
For the election junkies that are out there. So we are going to be telling about the results of the city elections and school district elections that were held here in Bonner County yesterday. And I'm going to rattle off the results right now so that people can hear who won yesterday. And then we'll swing back and talk about some of the larger races, particularly for the city of Sandpoint and Lake Pend Oreille School District. In the city of Sandpoint, the new mayor is going to be Jeremy Grimm. He got 1,159 votes, or 53.3% of the vote. And he bested Kate McAllister, who got 765 votes, 35%, and Fritz Moore, who got 249 votes for about 11.5%. In the council race here in the city of Sandpoint, the three council members who won are going to be, I say council member elects, are Kyle Schreiber. He collected the most votes with 1,521, most votes of any of the candidates, actually. That was good for almost 26% of the vote. Deb Ruhl, the incumbent, the only incumbent running for the three open seats in the city council, she received 1,058 votes, good for about 18%. And then Pam Duquette is the third winner there. She got 1,007 votes, about 17%. The other three candidates who ran but did not succeed were Grant Simmons, came in fourth with 829 votes, about 14% of the vote. Ellie Sussness received 797 votes, about 13.5%. And Amelia Boyd received 671 votes. That's 11.4%. And I will jump over to the Lake Pend Oreille School District, since that was the other race that we were covering most closely here. And there was only one seat up. That's the Zone 1 trustee for the Lake Pend Oreille School District, which was an open seat. And in that race, Scott Wood prevailed rather handily. He received 1,032 votes, or almost 70% of the vote, to Jen McKnight's 447, about 30% of the vote. And I'm going to tell the results of the other contested city races, which were Clark Fork, where there were, I believe, hang on a second, I'm going to double check this. There are two seats open in Clark Fork, and in that race, the two largest vote getters were Sharon Banning with 45 votes, Tanya Becker with 44 votes. The third candidate there was Tel Thompson. He received 35 votes. Seems like a pretty small number of votes in Clark Fork. Of course, they have a small population. City of Dover, let me double check this. City of Dover had two city council seats open, and the winners there were Keith Congleton with 144 votes and Dan Parkin. He was the incumbent. He received 125 votes. The third candidate there was Stephen Haynes. He received 108 votes. So those were pretty close vote totals, all told. City of East Hope actually had had four people running for two seats. As the mayor's seat was open, but the mayor was uncontested. That was Debbie Field. She was unopposed. For the city council there, the biggest vote getters in the city of East Hope were Don Wells, received 55 votes. Pam Brockes received 51 votes. And then the other two were David Rost, received 20, and Scott Wieman received 11. And we'll tell about the West Bonner County School District, because that was a matter of interest over here, even though nobody in Sandpoint or nearby lives there. That's the Priest River area. And the West Bonner County School District, the incumbent Margaret Hall, for zone, there were three seats up for election. For the zone one seat, Margaret Hall received 539 votes, or 59% of the vote, to Alan Galloway's 368, or 40.5% of the vote. Margaret Hall is the incumbent there. In the zone three seat, the incumbent Troy Reinbold received 285 votes, while Elizabeth Glazier received 186 votes. So Troy Reinbold held his seat there. And in the third seat, Kathy Nash received 406 votes to the incumbent Carlin Barton's 275 votes. So that seat is going to change hands. And with all that, let's circle back and see, talk about what happened in the city election. Again, the winner in the Sandpoint city election, I should say, the winner there was for mayor, Jeremy Grimm. He won by a pretty comfortable margin, actually. And then the with 53% of the vote to 35% of the vote for Kate McAllister, 11% of the vote for Fritz Moore. And then in the city council, again, Kyle Schreiber, Deb Rule, and Pam Duquette all won with a pretty comfortable margins of over almost 200 votes ahead of the other three that ran there, Grant Simmons, Ellie Sussness, and Amelia Boyd. Jack, break it down for us.
All right. Well, Grimm got a mandate, which I was not sure who was going to win that one, but I did feel pretty comfortable predicting that nobody was going to get a majority of the votes. I thought it was going to be split three ways
and closer.
Yeah. And closer, yeah. Jeremy got more than 50% of the vote. My analysis is, and I think I remember sitting here about 2 years ago talking about the last city election, which is that those of us who pay close attention, go to all the forums and stuff, we talk to certain people and we get a feeling about it. And sometimes I think we forget that this is a small town, and you can, if you are energetic, you can shake every single voter's hand over the course of a campaign. And Jeremy all but did, I think.
He really got out there.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, you. I think he, unlike a county election or something, which is much more difficult and which are always or usually partisan, and you have an R or a D next to your name to rely on.
And the voters are very spread out.
Yeah.
It's tough to get to everybody's door.
Exactly. Here, I think Jeremy was at, Jeremy was very visible. He was at a lot of events. Of course, he was at the explicitly political events and the forums and things like that. But I saw him at a couple other events around town, you know, shaking hands and handing out stickers and flyers and things like that. So,
And I'll say in that race, on election day, there were a bunch of folks that were waving Jeremy Grimm signs. I didn't see any of the candidates that had supporters out doing that for them. Aside from the door to door, it'll be interesting to see how the finance reports come in, because he ran a lot of advertising that none of the other candidates did, bigger ads and more frequent ads. So he had more funding. The other thing that happened, of course, is Jeremy really got on board with the protesters at over Traverse Park and the taking down of those trees there. And he received a big lift from the firemen. And of course, one of Jeremy's big platforms, I guess, is that he wants to eliminate the city administrator position.
I think that if you had to pick the one issue where there was the clearest division between the candidates, that's it. And so that will be an interesting thing to see going forward. Jeremy, the mayor does not have the power to summarily fire or eliminate that position. So
So it's going to have to be a go to a vote to the council if Jeremy's going to push it that direction. And the council makeup just changed. I think the council that's been incumbent has been pretty, you know, they feel like the city administrator's doing her work to manage the city. And the mayor's position is just, it's modeled to be only part-time. Mm-hmm. It only pays $25,000 a year. That's not enough for anybody to live on as a full-time salary, for sure. So it's going to be interesting for Juan to see how he juggles the demands of his own full-time business, which is a consultant to on planning issues and development issues, as with the the demands of a being mayor if that position were to be eliminated.
Yeah.
And I think he's referred to going back to a model where the individual department heads have more authority to make decisions. But there are still, almost any organization has a CEO that really has to run things. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. First of all, if he succeeds in eliminating it, he's got to get that passed, get the council to agree.
Yeah. And I mean, and in the meantime, there'll be, you know, they will be coworkers. They'll be all sharing City Hall together. And I kind of wonder how that's going to go. If everyone's going to be able to work together in the meantime, while we assume that Mayor-elect Grimm is going to be trying to eliminate that position. Mm-hmm.
There's another interesting factor here. So there are three incumbents seats on the city council that weren't up for election, but Andy, Andy's last name?
Grote.
Mm-hmm. Andy Grote, okay. Mm-hmm. He just resigned. So that seat's going to be filled by an appointment, I assume, by the current mayor, Shelby Ronstad. And so Mayor Ronstad has the ability to basically keep somebody that he is confident will act in the way he thinks that a city council should act into that seat, which with the incumbent Deb Ruhle winning re-election, that means we'd have basically four, if you want to say, incumbencies on the city council. The two new people, Pam Duquette, Kyle Schreiber, who both express a lot of skepticism about the city administrator position, might join with Jeremy, but who knows how the whole vote would pan out there on the newly constituted city council.
Yeah. that's interesting. I don't know how that vote would pan out. It would be close, and I don't imagine it's going to be brought before council on day one, but we shall see. I was kind of surprised, you know, when you can cast three votes for these at-large seats, I think some interesting and kind of unpredictable things happen where, for example, Deb Ruhle came in second place and, you know, clearly was resoundingly reelected, I guess we could say, or sent back to her seat. She is an incumbent and sat on city council right next to Kate McAllister, who was not elected to mayor. So it seems like that's sending kind of a, you know, mixed signals there. And also, Ellie Susness and Amelia Boyd, I would say, you know, I don't think, obviously this isn't personal. Nobody wants to hurt anybody's feelings, but I thought either one of them might take at least the third spot. I was surprised that neither of them made it onto council, and they've been involved in various city commissions over time, but they were not even really that close. They were,
And Ellie has lived for quite a long time. Amelia, not so long. Grant Simmons, who came in fourth, actually. I think he's been here about 15 years, so you know, long enough to know the city pretty well. But Pam Duquette has been here for many decades, as has Ellie. So trying to figure out how voters would have cast, maybe for individuals they knew personally, you would think Pam and Ellie Sussness would have had a pretty good leg up because mm-hmm. they've lived here a really long time and been enmeshed in the community, both of them in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But Pam outperformed Ellie quite a bit. Is that a result of more vigorous campaigning on Pam's part? I don't know. I don't mm-hmm. have any measure of judgment about how these city council members, how actively they got out and campaigned. Although I think Kyle Schreiber probably did a heck of a lot of campaigning.
Kyle Schreiber was, I think, the only, and I'm looking at my notes here from everybody I talked to yesterday. Kyle Schreiber was the only consistent guess that everybody had. Everybody thought Kyle was going to make it onto city council. I got a text message here for clarification, in case this wasn't clear. I don't know if this is what you were saying, but Andy's seat was one of the three seats that was up for re-election. So he will... whoever is appointed, if Shelby appoints somebody, that would only be until January, and then the other three, then Kyle, yeah, Deb, and Pam.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah.
Andy Grote's seat was up for re-election. Okay.
Yep.
Well, thanks for that correction.
Thank you, listener, for that correction. Yes.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. there's appointment made that is only going to go for 3 months.
Yep.
And that will be, I guess, at the mayor's discretion.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So that the next city or the city council will be Kyle Schreiber, Deb Rule, Pam Duquette, Jason Welker, Justin Dick, and Joel Aspiro. Let's see what else. It was a spirited campaign. You have to say, and I think.
Yeah, it was really difficult.
Yeah.
We were trying to take guesses beforehand.
Yeah,
we didn't get that close.
Nope.
And it was a difficult one to judge. I think it probably boiled down to the candidates that got out and did most on the ground campaigning, like you observed earlier.
I think so, and I think my prediction was kind of based on I thought that Kate McAllister would basically have a certain, let's call it an establishment vote, and then I thought Jeremy Grimm and Fritz Moore would more or less split a anti-establishment vote, and this was my last minute, as of like 4 o'clock in the afternoon, prediction. But that was incorrect, and I think that does probably come down to just, personal connection. Meeting people and talking to people at the moment of the election. I think, we have known Jeremy as a member of city government going back 10 years, but a lot of the 10 years or more, but a lot of the voters here probably met him this summer,
He was the city planner for a number of years, although he left that seat, probably at least 4 or 5 years ago.
I'm
guessing.
Mm-hmm.
It was that far back.
I think so.
Time flies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, anything else we want to observe about the Sandpoint City election?
I think I can safely say that I saw on my way down to the studio last night, I saw Pam Duquette. She had cast, her silhouette is recognizable. And I pulled over and I said, "Hey Pam, it looks like you might be in." And she seemed as surprised as anyone. She was I saw Kyle, spoke to him later that night, and he was surprised to hear that that we felt he was pretty much a lock going into it, that he was a shoe-in. He thought it was going to be much closer too. So
yeah, Kyle received mm-hmm. almost 500 votes more than the mm-hmm. next two closest, Deb and Pam. So. And if you just tuned in, we're relating the results of the Sandpoint City races, and our new mayor is Jeremy Grimm, who won by a pretty healthy, 400-vote margin, it looks like, about. And then for city council, the new city council elects are Kyle Schreiber, the incumbent Deb Rule, and Pam Duquette. So,
let's see.
How about the school district?
The school district
in the Lake Ponderay school district, one seat up for zone 4. And again, there, Scott Wood won with almost 70% of the vote, and Jim McKnight received the other 30%. Mm-hmm. And that was a race where we had more clear differences
mm-hmm.
between the candidates.
And Jen McKnight ran a very energetic campaign, I think. You saw a lot of her signs out there. She was always the first person to show up at the candidates' forums. Yeah. She was, you know, right there and prepared. I thought that was actually perhaps going to be closer, but Zone 1 especially is, I think, is mostly a rural district, but it's...
No, yeah, it includes Clark Fork,
yeah.
Hope and East Hope, and mm-hmm. the Northside School.
Yeah.
So that eastern portion of our county.
Uh-huh. But there are some very active education-focused groups that, through their support, I think, behind Scott Wood, and that helped his campaign quite a bit.
And Scott Wood grew up here, went to schools here. His family, the Wood family, you know, Wood's meat processing, and they some of their family members have Western Pleasure Guest Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Very well known in the community. So I wasn't at all surprised at Scott Wood winning that election rather handily, just based on his living here for so many years and being so enmeshed in the community.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, he has a cousin or a uncle or a nephew or niece, you know, in pretty much every every nook and cranny of the local establishment, yeah. I think.
But that was a race that had some pretty clear differences. Jim McKnight was, I'd say, I think they're both conservative. Jim McKnight was the more conservative.
Yeah, we need to work on our terminology because there's you don't want to disparage anybody, but there's, yeah, it would be hard to call it a left versus right thing or conservative versus liberal thing. It's a conservative versus... You said more conservative. I don't know if I would even say that, but we'll think of something anyway. Whatever that is.
Yeah, and these races are nonpartisan, so we can't judge them by party. But mm-hmm. I'm sure both of these individuals probably are Republicans. Who mm-hmm. knows? I don't know for sure, but my sense here is that you know Jen's was really running on you know more of a family centered sort of model and. You know, she's was against social emotional learning in the schools,
mm-hmm.
And the one trusted adult program that they have right now.
Mm-hmm.
She in our interview here on the air, you know, she said she really doesn't believe in that. She thinks that's the family's,
mm-hmm.
You know, the family's responsibility to be that one trusted adult for. For kids that are in school. Scott Wood, on the other hand, having been in the schools, wrestling coach, you know, he knows that a lot of these kids come from really troubled families, and mm-hmm. And the one trusted adult, he's been the one trusted adult, as he's pointed out for some kids that and he supports that kind of concept that you know the school the staff there can step into a really important role into young people's lives, especially when they're troubled with home life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other big thing that separated those two candidates, I think, was Jen McKnight felt the schools need some maintenance, perhaps, but we don't need to go on to a big facilities program. And Scott Wood is saying, hey, we have some schools that clearly need to be either vastly renovated or replaced.
Yeah.
So there was quite a bit of difference between the two of them on that.
That was a clear, probably the most, I don't know. Obviously able to differentiate those two candidates than in any of the city races, I would say, in terms of their positions on things. And there you have it. That was a, slam dunk, I guess, for Scott Wood.
Yeah.
The other thing I think I sometimes forget is, so city elections are at large, and when we have countywide elections, those are at large. Everybody casts a vote for county commissioner, but the school district is zoned, and that goes for West Bonner County, too, where the where it was not the West Bonner County results were not uniform. The incumbent in two cases, the incumbent held their seat, but those two incumbents are pretty opposed on most of the school district's issues. But they live in different zones, so they're using their different electorates.
They have different electorates that way. So yeah. Over there, it was Zone 1, Margaret Hall, again, the incumbent, won pretty handily against Alan Galloway. She got 60% of the vote. Alan Galloway's 40%. And then the other incumbent who won was Troy Reinbold, who, again, got about 60% of the vote in his Zone 3 against Elizabeth Glazier's about 40% of the vote. And as you pointed out, Troy Reinbold was one of the three trustees who had made some decisions that really devolved into a lot of issues over there, and ended up they hired a superintendent that was not well qualified and has since been discharged, but that led to a recall, and the two folks that had voted with Troy consistently were recalled. And then Margaret Hall was on the other side of the equation there. Mm-hmm. And in the third zone there, Zone 5, Kathy Nash, which is one of the conservatives that you could say was probably be more aligned with Troy Reinbold, won with about 60% of the vote to 40% of the incumbent, Carlin Barton. So that's an interesting dynamic that's shaping up now for the West Bonner County School District.
Very much so. And of the city administration that was in, or the school district administration that was in place in early August of this year, the five city council or the five school board members and the superintendent, going into January of next year, only two of those people will be the same. There's a new superintendent, and three of the five seats will be held by different people. And the majority of that five-member board now sits with a politically differently aligned group than held it in August of this year, would say.
If people can unpack that. It looks like the folks that are more...
would you say activist? Is radical fair to use? Is that an objective descriptor?
Well,
I don't know.
Some of the folks that were recalled were folks that were, very conservative and, really pushing for, to scale back what schools do, I think you could say. And now the majority is going to be held by people who are more traditionally pro-education.
Yeah.
And want to support the school system as we have it.
Yeah.
So it looks like there's going to be a 3-2 majority on the school board for a more traditional, let's support the schools, and probably will be in support of a levy, which failed previously. So the school district over there is struggling financially right now as well.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised at, Carlin Barton being unseated convincingly by Kathy Nash, especially when Margaret Hall held her seat comfortably. But I think that there were less than 600 votes, about 500 votes, I think, cast in that zone.
In Zone 5, there were 681 votes cast. Kathy Nash got 406, Carlin got 275. The other zone had a higher vote count.
Yeah.
There was over 900 votes cast there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Margaret Hall got 539 of those, Alan Galloway's 368. Interesting result over there. It wasn't all one way or the other. And there's going to be a healthy debate on how schools should go among the board members themselves.
Yeah. There certainly will. Let's see. Did we cover the what was I noticed as when I came in that the Clark Fork early returns were split evenly, one vote cast each for the city council out in Clark Fork. So apparently three people went to the polls and each of them cast a ballot for somebody different. Early, oh. That is. Yeah. Early. There was the preliminary results where there was only three votes cast, perhaps a family going on vacation, and they all cast votes for different people. That made me chuckle a little bit.
Yeah, that was the early result. But the final result, actually, there was a pretty low vote total over there. Again, Sharon Banning got 45 votes. Tanya Becker got 44 to win. And then Tel Thompson received 35.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we'll rattle off the other two cities again, in case folks missed it earlier. For the city of Dover, Keith Congleton and Dan Parkin were the winners there. And Dan was the incumbent, I believe. And then Stephen Haynes was the third candidate who did not succeed. East Hope, there were four people running for two city council seats, and Don Wells and Pam Brockes won with 55, 51 votes respectively. David Rost received 20 and Scott Wyman received 11.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fairly clear-cut election over there on East Hope. And that's something we did not cover
here
with our election coverage. So it's, again, a small city, probably a lot of it comes down to people getting out and campaigning and, and of course, their positions.
Yeah. I don't know enough about it. You'd think if there was a vast difference or somebody, you know, who was really breathing fire out there, that we would have heard about it out here. I think they were all kind of just stepping up to you know take part in city government because it's their turn or something like that. Yeah.
So back on the city standpoint, I did want to mention we don't have the actual the breakdown of voters by precinct. There were five precincts in which city residents lived and were voting. So we don't know what the voter turnout was exactly, but I went and dug up the number of voters in 2021. And in 2021, there were 6,306 individuals registered in those five precincts. The vote number this time was 2,173 total voted for mayor, which would give us the best indication of the number that voted. So about 2,173 people voted out of, you got to surmise, the registered voters in those precincts were, you know, probably at least 6,300, maybe 6,400 with some population growth. So the voter turnout looks like it was only around 35%. And in 2021, the voter turnout was probably closer to 40%.
Yeah.
So it looks like maybe the voter turnout was a little bit lower this time than in 2021, which would be kind of surprising to me.
It's surprising to me, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to remember that election, if there was anything particularly that really excited folks and got them trying to get out the vote. And I think I don't know if anything really springs to mind there.
I should say we need the official numbers on that.
Okay.
That's just my napkin computations on the number of voters last time compared to what we may have seen this time. So it'll be interesting to see what the turnout actually was. We'll probably see that later today from the county elections officer. He gives a breakdown of voting by precinct.
What more is there to say? You know, I mean, I don't know. I was thinking of the way the mayor's race came down. I mentioned that, you know, Jeremy had a very energetic campaign and spent a good deal of money in advertising, too. We don't know I don't think we know his total expenses, but it seems like he had the most well-funded campaign. Kate had, and this is something that hasn't really been mentioned in media, but she had a personal, it's been mentioned. We talked about it a little bit in our interview on here on KRFY. She had personal reasons that perhaps she was not quite as energetic as she might have been.
She had a family loss.
Yeah.
That was very affected her early on in the campaign. And in fact, she was even weighing whether she would continue with the campaign.
Right. I think that, that being said, that being an understanding of why maybe Kate's personal campaigning was less energetic, there was kind of a network in her previous campaigns of people who probably would have stepped up to create more energy for that, to say, hey, we got to get out there and knock on doors for Kate. And I think a lot of those people did not do that and were maybe more involved in the protests over at Traverse Park and kind of, you know, not obviously nobody, I don't think, held any ill will or anything like that, but people who might have come out and harnessed their energy for her were stayed home, more or less.
And the firemen were definitely rallying hard for
that's true.
Jeremy as well.
Yeah. So,
and they have a mm-hmm. probably a large network and a lot of folks that support the firemen. So I would do want to mention there were two other district elections in Bonner County, and we have the results sitting in front of us, so I'll rattle those off. One's the Sam Owen Fire District Commissioner Subdistrict. There was 1 4-year term up for election there, and Tony Butler received 193 votes to 80 votes for Jack Kramer. So Tony Butler is the Fire District Commissioner who's holding that seat now. And then there was a cemetery district election as well, the West Bonner Cemetery Maintenance District.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a ballot question whether or not they should increase the district's base budget amount by $41,067. And the people that voted in favor of that were 846, and the people that voted against it were 569. So it received a majority, and it probably just takes a simple majority. I'm not sure if it takes a supermajority to increase that or not. But definitely a handy, almost 60% favored increasing the budget for the West Bonner Cemetery Maintenance District.
I saw that last night, and I was curious about it, actually. It's not something I have ever even really thought about before. What makes... who's in charge of that? Who decided that they needed a raise and determined the figure that they were going to send to the public and all that stuff? What goes into the maintenance of cemeteries in West Bonner County? I have no idea.
Yeah, and actually in Bonner County there are 27 different taxing districts that could be conducting elections on these off years.
It's mm-hmm.
when the odd numbered years are when mm-hmm. these different districts hold their elections, municipalities, school districts, but also, you know, cemetery districts, mm-hmm. recreation districts, cemetery, fire districts. They all have elections. Now, there is no election if there are uncontested races. So there were quite a number that could have had elections, but they were uncontested this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, out of the 27 different taxing districts we have in the county, there's only this handful, really, that had contested races. So those were the folks that were on the ballot this time.
Hmm.
Well, Jack, anything
there you
else?
Go. I'm trying to think of what else there might be to say. I don't know. We're going to find out. I hopefully we'll be talking. Maybe we'll discuss off air exactly how we're going to do it. I'm sure you'll be hearing on these airwaves from all of the city council people elect and the mayor elect before too long, whether we're going to do that in, you know, at length or just take some brief statements. We will be doing that, I'm sure, in the next days and weeks, and we'll be talking to all of them so we can hear right from their own mouths what they predict is coming down towards us here in the city of Sandpoint and in the larger area.
Oh, and in the issues and policies that they'll be advocating for. So,
yeah. I think, I think that the signal here is that something is going to probably, things are going to be changing and shaking up a little bit at City Hall. The comprehensive plan, the waterfront development plan, I think these things are going to be back on, continue to be topics of discussion and debate. And I think whatever momentum they may have had in one direction or another now is probably, if not stopped, it's probably going to, you know,
it's going to be analyzed.
It's going to be analyzed, yeah, and things are going to be maybe changing direction, or at least you know, everything's going to be looked at again with different eyes, I think.
Yes, I do want to throw out there that everybody that voted, good job.
Mm-hmm.
You took part in our democracy, and it's by being engaged that we actually wind up with the best government that we can get for our money.
Mm-hmm.
So,
It was... it was a very, it wasn't an easy election to cover or predict, by any means. I was interesting to hear from all the, candidates involved I'm kind of glad it's over.
One thing that all the Sandpoint candidates, mayor and city council members all said repeatedly,
that
the city needs to do a better job communicating with the residents and the constituents. So we'll see how our new city council members, who campaigned pretty heavily on that, our new mayor, how they're going to actually encourage people to get engaged more in the city.
Yep. I think it's also, I'll echo something that I read in the Reader right before the election, where both Ben Olson and Zach Hagedon had said that we were pretty fortunate to live in a town of this size that has as much media coverage of local politics as we do. I think the Bee and the Reader both did a great job. Hopefully KRFY did its part as well. I think we did.
We tried.
Yeah.
We did talk to all the city council and LPOSD candidates. So.
And over at KSPT, I think they were talking about city issues as well. So we're fortunate to have as much of an involved media apparatus here as we do. I think a lot of towns of less than 10,000 people have, you know, even no paper.
Yeah.
I grew up in a city with, I think at the time, at about 40,000 people, there was technically a city paper, but you know, it was just covered by the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and the city I lived in had very little journalism or analysis of local issues out public. I think a lot of these conversations had to just kind of happen behind the scenes, and nobody knew what was going to happen.
Well, that's the value of the local media.
Yep.
It's keeping people informed. And the media comes in for a lot of criticism from folks who feel like, it's partisan or taking sides. But I will say I do know that in the reporting that both of our local newspapers do, they really do try to be balanced and fair.
Yep.
They don't always succeed.
Mm-hmm.
but I know it's striving to do that. So... kudos to having a pretty healthy media environment for a small city the way we are. We're going to go out here in just a moment, but before we do, I'm going to circle back to something we usually do at the top of the hour.
What you're going to do.
The weather.
Uh-huh.
Today and tomorrow, we're going to see areas of fog, then partly sunny is what the National Weather Service says. Highs are going to be in the mid 40s, and the lows are going to be around 28 to 32. And then on Thursday night, rain, and then likely a rain-snow mix is going to come sweeping in. And on Friday and Saturday and Sunday, we're going to see a lot of precipitation. The highs are going to be, again, in the 40s. The lows down in the lower 30s. So that could be rain, it could be snow, it could, I have a feeling it'll be both.
Mm-hmm.
Bat in the hatches for some a wintry mix there. As for other things going on around town, I'll mention just a few. There is a preview of the Come What May We Will Play, and that's going to be a new interactive exhibit at the museum, and that's happening tomorrow, Thursday, November 9th, from 4 to 7 p.m.
And then it opens officially the next day. We're actually talking on the morning show tomorrow morning with Olivia Fee from the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. Okay. So we'll cover that in depth at this hour tomorrow.
Okay, so tune in to hear what the new exhibit is all about. It's great what the museum is mm-hmm. rolling out these new exhibits. They're really bringing history to life.
A mm-hmm.
couple other things going on. Also on Thursday, this one's actually on Friday. There's a Rockabilly Space Force concert. Now that sounds pretty good.
Uh-huh. I've seen the posters for that. That
sounds pretty cosmic.
Uh-huh.
It's a special evening of rock and roll from the 1950s and beyond. So that's 1950s. You're going back to 70 years actually.
Mm-hmm.
The concert will benefit Sandpoint's Lost in the 50s event that happens in May. So music will include the likes of Chuck Berry, Buddy Holly, Janice Martin, Jerry Lee Lewis, Connie Francis, and more. And that's at the Panda Theater from 7 to 9 p.m. Doors will open at 6:30. That's on Friday. And then on Saturday, kind of a big event for anybody that likes to ski or snowboard. It's the annual ski swap put on by SARS. That'll be out at the fairgrounds. And it's from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. That's the Saturday, November 11th. And are you mm-hmm. skier at all?
Okay. Cross country, no, I do not know. I don't know how to ski. I like the après ski. That's my scene, but not.
But to have après ski, you have to have ski first. I mean, that's.
Okay. Well, fine.
the after ski.
Yeah.
You must first ski, but.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, there's mm-hmm. great deals there. And if you're a mm-hmm. skier, one thing that holds a lot of people back is just the cost of skiing.
Yeah.
This is the most low cost way to get some good equipment is to go to the ski swap. There'll be literally thousands of different kinds of skis. And if you're a cross-country skier, there'll be cross-country gear there.
That's true.
I'm sure there'll be all kinds of winter clothing.
Mm-hmm.
There will be snowshoes, probably ice skates to be had. Mm-hmm. So the whole gamut of winter recreational equipment and clothing will be there. And that, again, is Saturday at Bonner County Fairgrounds from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So catch that. And, Jack, anything else you want to put out there? Oh, I did want to mention there is an event coming up on next Tuesday, November 14th. It's called United Against Hate. It's a community conversation. But the interesting thing about this is that it's being put on by some a combination of federal, state, and local organizations. It's being hosted by the U.S. Attorney's Office for Idaho, as well as the U.S. Department of Justice, our local human rights groups, and the Kootenai Tribe of Idaho. So the goal here is to improve hate crime reporting by teaching community members how to identify, report, and help prevent them. We're seeing, with turmoil in the Mideast, actually, we're seeing nationally, we're seeing some of that flare up. But that's from 2 to 3:30 p.m. at the Heartwood Center. They ask you to RSVP with a registration in advance. You can find a link to that if you go to our website, krfy.org, click on the community calendars and scroll down to November 14th, and you'll see the United Against Hate if you'd like to take part in that community conversation and just learn more about what's going on there. Okay,
I
got everything in that I needed to get in. How about you, Jack? Anything else?
I could talk about this forever. I have one more thing that I guess I didn't say, and as I've just been sitting here thinking about it. See what you think about this. I think if these elections had been held in May, if these city elections had been held in May, I think that, you know, looking back before this summer, at that time, the county government was kind of in chaos, and looking at the city of Sandpoint was a contrast, and it looked like a steady hand at the tiller. And I think Kate McAllister would have been elected handily. And I think after a very busy summer with the rollout of the waterfront development plan and the comp plan and the brand new changes over at Traverse Park, I think the city electorate is kind of said, whoa, what's, you know, things are moving fast. And I don't know if it's so much that they don't like the direction, but again, it's the communication. People feel like things are maybe a little out of control, or out of their control anyway. And that's, I think, the message beyond everything else that I said. I think that's the message that I'm taking from this one.
Yeah. And I mean, I think all this is being driven by a lot of population growth.
Yep.
These home prices, housing is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
It actually wasn't talked about as a very front burner thing in a lot of it. I don't even know if we had a housing question at the forum we put on, but
that continues to be. Yeah, I know, because
but housing is a terrible issue here for local people. They're really struggling and paying a bigger percentage of their income into finding just a place to live.
Yeah,
it's very problematic. And that the population growth, the housing market, of course, inflation in general has all driven a lot of discontent.
Yeah.
So
it certainly has. And it doesn't feel, around Sandpoint, it doesn't feel like we're living in a divided community where half the city is at the other half's throats or anything like that. It feels like kind of, but there is just big change coming. Maybe nobody is, without any individual driving that change is coming. And I don't know. And I think it's, and City Hall has to, as our elected representatives, has to get ready for that, to manage that, I guess.
You got to figure out how to cope with the change.
Yeah.
And so there you go. New city council and mayor. Mm-hmm. There's your...
There it is. Yeah.
There's what you got to work with.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, thanks again for listening to the KRFY Morning Show here. And Jack will be back in tomorrow. Is Jim Healy going to join you?
Jim Healy will be here tomorrow.
Your co-host.
Yeah.
And then on Friday, of course, we have this new show that we've started a couple months back. And that is the North Idaho News of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll run through the bigger headlines of the local news scene.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to also say you can call this radio station 208-265-2992. Probably nobody's going to be around today, but if you have thoughts, differing thoughts with what we said here, this is a community radio station, and I at least would be interested in hearing what you think, and I will go through any voicemails that we get between now and Friday and see if I can sum those up.
Yeah, we'll just invite folks. If you want to call in and give us your 2 cents, your feedback on the election and what you observe, that'd be great grist for our mill at News of the Week on Friday.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What do you got queued up for us?
Well,
there,
we're going to go out with Mississippi John Hurt playing the Coffee Blues.
And, I'm going to
go have me a cup of coffee myself after this. All right, Jack, thanks for joining me today. And everybody out there, thanks for listening.
Thank you, Chris.